focus areas that need that amendment. The first block, which is blue in the presentation, is about establishment, functions, and general powers of the board that we need to look at, membership of the board, operating procedures of the board. And alongside that part, we have also put the administrative and other matters in terms of administration, finances of the board, and all other matters relating to that part. And then number two, we then focus on demarcation issues. For example, the determination of boundaries, work program, when boundary determination takes effect, from the lessons we've learned, demarcation objectives, factors to be taken into account, public notification and determination, considerations by board, public meetings, etc., etc. And the last part deals with the migration and rationalization of the provisions from the Structures Act to the Demarcation Board so that we don't have duplication and so on. It will also strengthen the Demarcation Act, and we're indicating which are those sections, such as Section 85, Subsection 3, and Schedule 1, Items 2 to 5. Slide, the next slide, we give a breakdown of the definition. Under the definition, we indicate in red that we needed to change manager to chief executive officer as accounting officer in terms of Chapter 5 of the PFMA. So in other words, we're aligning PFMA provisions and other pieces of legislation so that we strengthen the Demarcation Act. And then in terms of Section 4, with regard to functions, we also are pointing to the amendment of Section 4B by extending the advisory role section to provide for the MDB to make recommendations to Parliament on provincial boundaries, and also recommendation to NEC on the allocation of powers and functions. There's that step that we're also closing there. Section 5, the general, speaks to the general powers. We are also indicating there to say the MDB will still obtain further input from National Treasury with regard to that area of work and so on. So, Section 9, term of office. We are saying that we have got to amend Section 9.1 to extend the period of the board to tenure to retain consistency rather than, you know, keeping it as a short-term kind of period. The MDB to check with other constitutional institutions in the process, you know, developing, dealing with this amendment. Boards in this regard as well. Section 11, conditions of the appointment of conditions of appointment of the members. That we are proposing that there will be an amendment of Section 11 to be in line with PFMA. That's rationalization with these other pieces of legislation and good corporate governance. Also to extend Section 11.2 as well there, and then we go on to Section 15, which talks about the meetings. It speaks to meetings. We say we need to add a new section to read that a board member may not be absent from three consecutive board meetings without leave of absence from the chairperson. And in terms of Section 17, we are also, with regard to decisions, we are also proposing the amendment to provide for deciding casting vote by the board chairperson when a simple majority is not achieved. And in terms of Section 18, about the committees, to amend Section 18 to provide for an additional 18, section 18.6 to enable the board to establish a technical consultation committee of key demarcation stakeholders to be consulted before any redetermination decisions are made. And section 32 is about the appointment of manager. We need to replace, as I said earlier, the word manager with chief executive officer with regard to that. Section 33, responsibilities of the manager, amend in line with section 32 about the CEO. And responsibilities must be aligned to responsibilities of accounting officers that are governed by the PFMA. And with regard to section 35, the pension right, this must be linked to section 34, which talks to conditions of employment of employees. So that's the proposal. Section 36 regarding the funding, it must be stated that revenue generation must be limited to, and the conditions must be clearly stated. The objective for the additional funding revenue must be stated as well. With regard to the section 39, accounting and reporting. We are proposing that there must be an addition of a new provision to deal with reports to include cash flow statements, notes to the annual financial statements, etc. To tighten that current provision. And then we also have this demarcation act. There are a number of sections that need to be amended, unlike the others that I'll deal with after this one. Section 21, determination of municipal boundaries. We're saying we need to add section 21, subsection 8, to address the establishment of an appeals committee. The chairperson of the appeals committee must determine the procedure to be followed during consideration of objections. The term of office of the appeals committee will be in line with the term of office of the board, as proposed earlier. And then section 24, demarcation objectives. We're saying we need to add a new 24E, section 24E, which speaks to demarcation objectives, must be read together with 152 of the section 152 of the Constitution. We need to add a new subsection 24, subsection 2, which provides that the board must conduct municipal capacity assessment. Section 22, which talks to work program, we need to insert new provision to regulate the frequency of redetermination based on the extent of the changes. For example, issues of amalgamations and categorization are considered after a period of 10 years instead of 5 years, for the case, and more redeterminations and so on. And then MDB and IEC will do more work in this regard. There will still be more work to give up this area. And then section 25, factors to take into account, amending section 25 to insert the following additional factors: geostatistical building blocks, which facilitates and supports a standard geographical hierarchy as well. And issues of the ward delimitation. The board must conduct ward delimitation every municipality that qualifies to have wards every 10 years, taking into consideration the local planning and service delivery roles of wards, in line with the previous provisions that we have alluded to earlier. And then section 25. What are the factors that we need to take into account? Amending section 25 to insert the following additional factors. Oh yes, that's the same one that I've spoken about. And the ward limitation, I've dealt with that. Amendment of number 20 of section 26, 27, and 28 on public participation
was saying, we repeal sections 26, 27, and 28 under Part 3. These will be replaced by the new provisions on public participation to provide mechanisms, processes, and procedures, and to strengthen community participation in demarcation matters, which was an area which was not strong enough. Section 29, formal investigations. We are proposing that there should be amendment, section 29.1, subsection 1, to enable the board to institute a formal investigation on any application unless it is a minor technical adjustment, etc. So that was the first part of the amendment of the demarcation and rationalization of PFMA and various other, the constitution and other legislative sections that would strengthen the part. And then the second part is Municipal Structures Amendment Bill.
No, I don't want to pursue this issue. The amendments are not made. We deal with one, have comments from members that are issues in preparation, and we are not here right now. That is assisting us to inform about the program or proposed legislation. Let us take one and hear whether there are comments from honorable members. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair, and my apologies for being late. I was stuck in traffic. Chair, I have just two questions on these amendments. The first deals with Section 18, which talks about a technical consultation committee of key demarcation stakeholders. Now, what is meant by key demarcation stakeholders? It could be argued that the residents of a particular municipality or a ward are key demarcation stakeholders. It could be argued that political parties are key demarcation stakeholders. So we need to define that, and it might well be that that needs to go into the definition up front. The second has to do with Section 21, which is the Appeals Committee. And I would argue that Section 21 or that Appeals Committee needs to be independent of the board. If the board is considering the initial application, the board then can't be its own appeal authority. So you need to have some kind of independent structure that could be referred to as the board, and we need to look very carefully at how that is set up. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. You are seeing me,
that's good. Thanks very much, Chair. I'm going to ask Ramakanda first to speak to that from the Demarcation Board.
Thank you. Don't run away from our thing. There's a lot of problems in demarcation. Don't tell us which one you all do. Matadiel.
Thank you very much, Didier. Thank you. Yes, in terms of the proposed technical committee, hence we call it technical. I agree with the fact that we need to define it specifically so that it doesn't become confusion. It's not left open. But what we had in mind here, I think it comes from recommendations amongst others from the conference and the demarcation process review last year, that institutions such as SSA will provide whom we use most of their data. Institutions like National Treasury in terms of the possible viability of the municipality. Before these decisions are taken, they need to have an input and so that which the board can consider. But I agree with the sentiment that it needs to be specifically defined so that and even their rules, so that it's not mixed. Because even the, like you said, member, the communities are also a stakeholder. So we need to define their rules and who they are. And with regards to the appeals committee, I think members would know that this is an invention, if I may put it that way, to try and at least provide, before these things are finalized, provide an opportunity for members of the public to have some form of recourse before the board can finalize the process. So we just felt that we needed to do that internally, but it doesn't stop that after the board has taken a decision, we can have a forum or a committee that is independent of the board, whereas at the moment it's more the court. So we're trying to at least eliminate some of the expenses that the communities are experiencing by going to court almost immediately, so that some of these things can be eliminated.
Sorry, Chair, I just picked up two other issues. The first one is these geostatistical building blocks. Again, that needs to be defined. What do we mean by geostatistical building blocks? And the other one was... I've lost it now. I'll come back to it when I remember.
It's not surprising me a lot. The demarcation should assist us not to have non biased in our last meeting, which you are not sorry to that meeting or not. In the last meeting, it was very clear that there are three main non biased that we may need anyway to this setup with our case. And then it causes a lot of problems. This is where suddenly we realize that our election, that you know, this thing has been not viable, despite the fact that the main issue that was raised for the demarcation purposes was to get rid of non-viable local authorities or municipalities.
Again, to be such a victim in this, what is the status quo right now for members that do not attend the meeting? Are you correcting something or people are just not there for some time and nothing has happened? And I also want to hear that a clarity change in terms of this appeal board as to, are they looking for the, maybe like a retired judge, what type of people that they are expected here, that they form their own vote, or in the absence of the appeal, what are they doing? What is their other function besides?
You wanted to say that?
Yeah, Chair, sorry. I remembered what I've forgotten. 24.2 talks about municipal capacity assessment. And I think that one of the things that we learned in this last demarcation process was that those assessments were not readily available to the stakeholders on the ground, the communities, the municipalities, etc., the people that were affected by it. So two things that I would suggest here. One is that we put in something that says that when a demarcation is to be considered, there must be a municipal capacity assessment not older than 12 months or 18 months at the most. Okay. The second is that before any demarcation is determined, that there be that those reports be available to the general public. Maybe it's on the demarcation website or something like that, but as they become available, they get put up and made available to the public. There's nothing secret in these reports. It should be available so that people are informed of what the criteria are and why they're being changed.
Thank you very much. We should appreciate the fact that the important is compliant. It goes some way to understand the issues. But I just thought it would be a good idea to raise the fact that the demarcation board issues, the question of demarcation in general, seems to me to have inbuilt into it a lot of instability and pattern. So that's one of the issues, I mean, that we have to look into to avoid future problems. minimize future problems. It would have been very useful. I don't know. I mean, understand this. I said it would have been very useful to actually talk to the actual problems in the Malaysia in the last 20 years. These are problems that have arisen, and this is how these are therefore being dealt with. To some extent, I mean, the presentation was an attempt to do that. But I think that a bit more could be done.
Thank you. I know that we are trying to balance things. Members of Parliament are pointing to discussing the details of something that is not before them. Because these amendments are not before us. Then we are trying to balance the situation where members of Parliament by default, they hand over their power of making laws to administration. But at the same time, we don't want administration to propose something that is totally untied. And we're trying to balance the team. The main purpose was for the team to give us the problem in terms of the executive, what they intended to propose and why they're proposing. And then our staff also from India, I know that if anything we have to avoid even assisting them in America. That's how you trust teams and generally temptation always to them because we are not here. But we have to balance it with the people who are just giving us information. With some amendments that are not before anyone, but ensuring that we prepare to solve the problem of the community, that these are the areas that we are expecting to come from there. We mustn't assist you before even table the amendment bill. But also, if we don't assist you, if you table the amendment bill, that will take us many years for to be not expiring it. We are trying to balance it too.
Thanks very much. I think a number of inputs that are assisting us in terms of enriching quality process and looking at our amendment. I'll ask Mr. Ramakar, the issue of whether considering the judges, what sort of individuals are we looking at to serve the board, appeals board, and the current status now, you know, what happens if people don't come and attend the meeting? So, you know, if you could just clarify those as well.
Thank you very much, Amy. Yes, in terms of the appeals committee, we are looking at an independent judge, representing the independent judge to be the chair of that particular committee. It will most likely not be a full-time committee. It will only sit when there are issues to be considered. So we will not have, most likely not going to have a full-time committee sitting and waiting for issues to come. In terms of the committee members, at the moment, the problem hasn't really arisen, but when we were analyzing, I think you mentioned that we went through clause by clause in terms of the act itself, we realized that just for the mere fact that you haven't had problems, whilst you know that this can be a problem, it's better to tighten it up even before the problem arises. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're trying to do here.
Sure. How much are you taking from the legal function that you have on demonstration for some number of powers that there were lots of very creative ways to make demonstration international experience with another area. How much do they have something that you can do to propose these amendments on the existing or again is that something away or the plan from that damage or content of communication? But I think I'm very happy. The main kind of sort of the shapiness in the community. That one of the some of the reasons why in other areas, that lack of people participating, in a meaningful way. And that you come into a picture to tell them you close your home. And the next day, you say, but what do you think? They're not cool about some of them. As I hope that, as you are coming to amend it also, they are taking a good proposal, not everything, but a good proposal to put forward. I think that's the issue, that's why you want to make this amendment. Okay, colleague. Madam Yara.
I've taken the opportunity.
Okay. Let's move to number two, colleague. Municipal Structures Amendment Bill proposed according to the article.
Thanks, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. The amendments to the Structures Act mostly relate to proposals received from the IEC. These proposals are informed by challenges that have been experienced by the IEC during the administration and management of municipal elections. GCOC, SALGA, provinces, and sub-municipalities have also proposed other amendments to the Structures Act, which are in the main to propose certainty on some matters and to strengthen governance in municipalities. The next bullet will show, you know, how elections have evolved over a period of time. So from 2000, we had 60 by-elections, 2006, 54 by-elections, 2011, 741 by-elections, and 2016-19 by-elections, just to demonstrate how elections have really evolved over some time. And there again, we have those blocks which are clustering common issues, and there will be impact on the following pages. The first one, the electoral matters that have to do also with definition of declared elected, allocation of excessive seats and party lists. Those things, we had gaps, and Amendment 6 to clarify some of those. And with regard to governance-related issues, issues of removal of reference to district management areas, issues of functions of speakers, office of the whip, quorums and decisions also, you know, have shown various gaps. And then the third one is public participation, which honorable members have alluded to, that there should be a formula for determining number of ward committee members. The current model is not very helpful. MM should oversee election of ward committees. That's the proposal, inclusion of traditional leadership in ward committees as well. And the last block leg is traditional affairs. Definition of traditional leader and the provision of feedback to communities. Term of leaders to be linked to term of municipal council. These are traditional leaders. There's going to be links. Otherwise, they'll just disappear before the term of councilor. Clarify role of leaders. And then the last one, which is number five, the others, is migration of electoral-related provisions from the Structures Act to the Municipal Electoral Act. And at the moment, IEC is engaged in Home Affairs to deal with that. Now, the table that follows, I will not go line by line like I've done with the previous one. safe to say that the issues of definition, we have received input from IEC, Mpumalanga and Western Cape with regard to gaps in this area of definition, and that needs to be strengthened on Section 1. And Section 22, election of metropolitan and local councils. DCOC also, at DCOC, we have also identified gaps there that we are proposing that something has got to be done. Section 25, on issues of by-elections, the issue of district management areas I talked about. So I think the MEC and not the municipal manager must call and set the date for a by-election in the provincial gazette and not in local newspapers. Some of those areas. The MEC and not the municipal manager may not call a by-election, etc. It's indicated there. Now if we look at number 5, Schedule 1, Part 3, Item 16, which speaks to excessive seats. It deals with the allocation of excessive seats, which is multiple seats. New provision substitutes Item 16, okay, that is proposed. And then the amendment of Schedule 1, Number 6, Part 3, Item 17, insufficient party list. Political parties are given 2 days to supplement their list. Addition of a sub-item to deal with multiple seats will be included as well. And the amendment of Schedule 1, Part 3, in Item 18, filling of vacancies. Item 18, Subsection 1, D, is amended to provide for the municipal manager to report a vacancy list within 14 days, among others. If the municipal manager does not inform the IEC of a vacancy, the MEC, it will be escalated to the MEC to deal with that. The second one, the inputs from the IEC, number 8, amendment of Schedule 1, Part 3, Item 20, filling of vacancies and changing the order. The proposed amendment of this item provides that a political party may not supplement or change its list from the date of the close of candidate nomination and may only do so after the result of the election has been declared. So that is an area that is being proposed. And number 9, amendment of Schedule 2, electoral system for district councils. Part 1, proportional elections. Item 10, uncontested elections. Political parties are given 2 days to supplement insufficient lists. A party may not supplement or change its list from the date of the closure of the nomination of candidates for an election until the date of the declaration of the result of that election and so on. Some of those. IEC is making those proposals. KZN has also made proposals with regard to Schedule 3 on election of office bearers. Schedule 3 be amended to provide for a deadlock breaking mechanism relating to the election of local councillors to serve on district municipalities. And IEC and DCOG, you know, came up also with migrate municipal election provisions to the Local Government Municipal Electoral Act, which is new, to strengthen the act. And now the next one is amend Section 1 definitions clause. The term district and local municipality be defined. So this is the proposal from Salva. And Section 7, types of municipality, we need to delete subsection C in order to do away with plenary municipalities. That's Salva's proposal. Okay, let us make proposal of where they say we must amend Section 20 on determination of number of councils. They propose that the minister's formula for the determination of the size of council referred to in Section 21, Subsection 1A, be clarified in respect of status of fraction in the calculation. And KZN further made proposal that we amend Section 26, the term of office of councillors. Section 26 be amended to provide for a process to declare the council and councillors elected. And Section 26, Subsection 3, be inserted to empower MECs responsible for local government to publish a framework outlining roles and responsibilities of office bearers for adopting by municipalities. And then number 5, amendment of Section 30, issue of quorum and decisions proposed by DCOG. The proposed amendment confirms that the number to be considered to determine the quorum in a meeting must be the number of councillors as determined by MEC in terms of Section 12 of the Structures Act, reading in of the words from a constitutional court judgment as well. We needed to amend Section 37, Functions of Speakers, as sponsored by SALGA, insert additional subsection to Section 37 of the Functions of the Speaker as follows. These are the proposals. The Speaker, the Municipal Council, must ensure that the legislative arm of the municipality functions effectively, and G, capital A, is responsible for effective oversight of the executive, etc. Those other amendments as well. And the amendment of Section 41, Acting Speakers, KZN, Western Cape, and SALGA, have made the following recommendations there. Section 41 be amended to ensure that the municipal manager must call a meeting in instances where the speaker, acting speaker, refused to call a council meeting. And amend Section 43, which speaks to composition of executive committees. KZN is proposing that, suggesting that in election of executive committees, consideration be given to the introduction of a process similar to the one contained in items of Schedule 2 of the Act, which regulate the election of local councillors to the district council in order to ensure consistency in council. And then the amendment of Section 44 on functions and powers of executive committees. It is proposed that Section 44 to extend the authority of the executive committee and implement the separation of functions, was sponsored by SALGA, and so on. And then Section 53, KZN proposed that, in particular, Section 53, subsection 2, be inserted to provide for any removal in terms of subsection 53, Section 53, subsection 1, to be in accordance with the rules of natural justice and to be dealt with in terms of the code of conduct. And then the Section 56 amendment proposed that functions and powers of executive mayor, SALGA is proposing that we amend Section 56 to extend the powers of the executive mayor and implement the separation of powers. Office of the Wee Chief Whip, and so on, provide for the Office of the Whip. Peacock has also identified that and sponsored it. And the amendment on Section 79, other committees of municipal council, in order to promote good governance, this section needs to be amended to strengthen representation and participation of the ward committees. Provide more powers to Section 79 committees, and make it difficult to remove a member of a committee and align the scope in Parliament. And amend Section 80, committees to assist the executive committee or executive men. Proposes that the roles of portfolio committees be clarified in Section 80, or a provision made to enable MECs responsible for local government to publish a framework in this regard. And there are some sections that need to be amended, Section 83, 84, 85, 88, and to repeal Section 89. And some of the sections that are supposed to be deleted, such as Section 89, to provide for a single-tier municipality outside metropolitan areas. That is sponsored by SALGA. In as far as public participation is concerned, the issue of the review of the size of ward committees to allow flexibility and representativity. We're making reference there to Section 73, Subsection 2B of the Structures Act. That's where that provision is. Now, this is what is proposed. that a formula for determination of the number of ward committee members per ward is to be developed in order to provide for differentiation. And the motivation for that, I think the maximum of 10 ward committee members limits the representation of diverse interests in community, particularly in large wards. Then the other one is legislate election process of ward committee members. New proposal for insertion in Structures Act, Section 73. We are proposing that the municipal manager or municipal electoral officer should be responsible to oversee the election process of ward committees. The motivation is that the election of ward committee members currently not regulated, and that has cast doubt on the legitimacy of members as truly representative of that ward community there. And the next one is legislate that the election process to be conducted with the assistance and advice of the Independent Electoral Commission. We're proposing that new proposal for insertion in the Structures Act, Section 73. And what are the proposals? The IEC's expertise and credibility will greatly enhance electoral processes and reduce vulnerability of those elections. And furthermore, arrangements could be made through the municipal manager for IEC to provide assistance and advice on the election of ward committees so that elections are regulated within the prescripts of IEC for credibility. Why are we doing that? Ward committee elections are in certain instances conducted in a free and fair manner. Unregulated election processes compromise credibility, and I've said that point earlier. And legislate that traditional leaders serve in ex officio capacity in ward committees. Section 81 of the Structures Act makes reference to the participation of traditional in municipal council. It is proposed that Section 73, Subsection 2 of the Structures Act be amended to include traditional representatives in ward committees in ex officio capacity and could be even ruler, whom they seem more appropriate than traditional leaders. Even ruler, responsible for village, would be more appropriate there. The inadequacy of the motivation of consultation with traditional leaders. We have seen contestations from those areas where you have traditional leaders and so on. So that's why we're amending it this way. It will go a long way to harmonize the relations at that level between elected leaders and traditional leaders. The next one is legislate that ward committees have prominence in the legal framework for public participation. And we are making reference to Municipal Structures Act, Section 19, Subsection 2, C. What are we proposing? That we insert a specific reference to ward committees in Section 19, Subsection 2, C of the Municipal Structures Act to instruct municipalities to annually review the performance of ward committees. And furthermore, insert a specific reference to ward committees in Section 72 of the Municipal Structures Act, instructing municipalities to include ward committees in their IGP processes, their process plan, if it has ward committees. And lastly, to insert a specific reference to ward committees in Sections 44, Subsection 3, G, etc., to instruct the municipal executive to annually report to municipal council on the performance of ward committees. And that way we think that those ward committees will be made more functional and more, and so on. And why are we doing this? Lack of prominence of ward committees in legal frameworks and so on. Things are left casually in an ad hoc fashion in that space. Traditional leadership, which is the last leg, the issues of definition clauses, that the term of traditional leader and traditional authority be defined to make it clear which ones should participate in the municipal council proceedings. And we are GTA sponsoring that. And the second one, amend section 81, monitoring and feedback in accordance with section 81, subsection 2, in terms of the criteria to be followed in selection of traditional leaders that may participate in the municipal council proceedings. Currently, section 81 is very cumbersome, you know, to be followed, which talks about the MEC identifying 20% of this and that. And it's a very cumbersome, very few MECs are dealing with that. We are recommending an amendment that section 81 be amended to make it clear which criteria to be followed on the selection of the traditional leaders that may participate in municipal council proceedings, and the publication of notices and gazettes containing the names of identified traditional leaders be flexible to make it possible for the identified traditional leader concerned that they are replaceable in instances where the traditional leader passes on or where the recognition is withdrawn and all those kinds of things, so that we are not just stuck. This is the input from the National House of Traditional Leaders that we should consider. And in terms of the section 81 subsection 2B, the 20% threshold that I talked about of traditional leaders that may participate in the municipal council proceedings is not always met, and so I've already spoken about that. Amend section, this section 81 subsection 2, the term of identified traditional leaders. The amendment proposed that section 81 be amended to link the term of the identified traditional leaders to municipal council to harmonize those terms accordingly. And furthermore, on issues, the amendment on issues of gender representation, which is a serious matter in the sector, traditional leadership sector. The principle of at least one third of women representation be applied in identification of traditional leaders who must participate in the municipal council proceedings as well. This is the National House that is sponsoring that, and quite a number of people think that traditional leaders are averse of gender representation. They are proposing that it must be strengthened there to ensure that women are also included there. And then amendment of section 81, subsection 5B, payment of out-of-pocket expenses, which is a headache. Section 81, the amendment subsection 5B, be amended to provide for uniform approach between the same categories of municipalities in determining the payment of out-of-pocket expenses for identified traditional leaders. And currently, many of them no longer participate. And they say, no, they have not been paid out-of-pocket expenses. And those kinds of things. So if we unify them, it will assist us to help us deal with the inconsistency. And also section 81.5B, identification of traditional leaders that may participate in the municipal council. Section 18.3 be amended to make it clear which identified traditional leaders. I've also alluded to that earlier. And part 6, participation of traditional leaders. It is proposed that the roles of traditional leaders in municipal council be clarified or the term participate is defined, because they are not allowed to vote in that environment there. And they keep demanding that they should vote and so on. And then the timeline, we are proposing the timeline that follows. For the demarcation and structures bills, the table below indicates the proposal of the time frame. As far as the local government Municipal Structures Amendment Bill, where the status or date for obtaining legal opinion, the status where it is now on the process. You say previous bill was certified by the state law advisors on the 10th of April 2016. And further amendments being proposed to the Structures Act, and the revised bill to be submitted to the state law advisors by March this year. And then the socioeconomic impact assessment, saying final impact assessment obtained on the 20th of January 2016, and the revised impact assessment to be obtained during April, May 2017. And what are the timelines to submit public consultation? We hope that by June 2017, we'll be dealing with that part. Introduction to Parliament, October 2017 timeline. Public consultation, July 2017. Introduction to Parliament by November 2017. And that, and then local government municipal demarcation amendment bill to be submitted. It has not yet been submitted to state law advisors, and it will be submitted by March 2017. Still to be obtained during April, the certification to be obtained by that time. And it is envisaged that public consultation will commence in June 2017, introduction to Parliament, October 2017, public consultation, July 2017, introduction to Parliament in November.
Thank you very much, Chairman. General comments, number one, maybe general comments.
This issue of involving the traditional leaders. When I heard any complaints before, and then during the election of the term of office of the chancellor and the term of office of the traditional leader and party. So that one to also explain to me what will happen in a while where it was more than five in some of the parts that with all of them, and the
Chair, I think that this is very, very premature, this document. I think it's a lot of proposals that have been thrown at a piece of paper, and I don't think there's been a lot of thought put into which ones are usable and which ones are not. I'll give you some examples. On number 2 on that list, amending section 7, deleting subsection C to do away with penary municipalities. In many municipalities, you've got very small councils, 10 members, 12 members. Now, if you start creating an executive committee or a mayoral executive, more than half your council are going to be on your makeup. It means that council doesn't actually have a function, because the role of council is to hold the mayoral executive or the executive committee accountable. And I think that example is just one that was glaringly obvious for me. There were a number of times where it talked about the MECs being responsible for a framework outlining roles and responsibilities of office bearers, and MECs provide a framework for the roles of portfolio committees. I find that a little bit strange, but okay. I don't think it should be a function of MECs, because I think that's a common role across all municipalities, whether they are in KZN or the Eastern Cape or the Western Cape. And if it is going to be done, then it needs to be done at a national level rather than at a provincial level, because you'll start having provincial differences that, that really don't make any sense. Again, this, on number 7, the one that's up there on the screen, section 41 to be amended to ensure that the municipal manager can call a municipal meeting when the speaker or acting speaker refuses to call a town meeting. Section 41 refers specifically to the appointment of an acting speaker where the speaker is not available. I don't think this is the right section for this. I think it should be handled under section 29, which talks about the calling of council meetings and who is responsible for calling different council meetings. I don't think it should be dealt with under acting speakers at all. I'm concerned about increasing the size of ward committees. A ward committee is a public consultation forum. First of all, there's a cost for ward committees. As it is, municipalities are struggling under the cost burden. And if we start saying, well, a ward must have 50 members or 20 members on a ward committee, it's going to increase the cost of those ward committees. We've set a maximum of 10. We haven't set a minimum. I mean, a small ward, we could say, have 5 members or 3 members, so long as you've got that public consultation taking place. And then, with regard to the traditional leaders, first of all, there's a number of numbering errors in here. It keeps talking about section 18.2 and 18.3. It should be 81.2 and 81.3. I'm a little bit concerned about the section that talks about 18.2 and the 20% threshold of traditional leaders that may participate in municipal council proceedings is not always met. Well, if there are not enough traditional leaders to meet the 20% threshold, then you can't go and create traditional leaders. It says that's the maximum number of traditional leaders. You can't go and bring more in from outside or, you know, elect new traditional leaders. It's just not enough. I think, for example, Chairperson, City of Johannesburg, you come from Johannesburg, there are only 2 traditional leaders in that area, I think. I could be wrong, but I think it's 2. And, you know, to say that 20% of council must be... So it doesn't make sense. This proposal from KZN that traditional leaders be permitted to vote in council meetings, that can't fly. We have a democratic process. Councils are the democratic representatives of people. The purpose of having traditional leaders is very carefully defined as giving input, giving advice, and consultation. It's not there to take the decision in and on council matters. And we need to be, and maybe this is something that we need feedback in, is what is consultation? What is consultation defined as? It goes to the previous point there about which traditional leader must be consulted. Well, if I write a letter to all the traditional leaders and say, you've got 2 weeks to respond to me, is that consultation? If I have a meeting with them, is that consultation? What is consultation? So we need to clarify that. And then there was one other point here. With regard to the function of the speaker, I think there needs to be a line put in there that talks about the speaker should act impartially. It's one of the concerns that we have that speakers can be biased and they need to act impartially. There's a proposal that section 56 be amended to extend the powers of the executive mayor, but there's no clarity as to what powers they're wishing to extend to the executive mayor. There's a proposal that we make it difficult to remove a member of a committee. No. I've never heard of such a thing. I think the prerogative of council to... Well, no, it's not so much the prerogative of council. It's more the prerogative of a political party to decide. In fact, this is one of the things that maybe we should put in, is who decides who represents a particular political party on a committee. Because there's municipalities where whoever's in power says, well, on this committee, Kevin's going to be on it, and on this one, Honourable Masepe is going to be on it, but they're deciding for another political party, and they don't have that right to decide how a political party deploys its members to committee. So we need to maybe clarify that a little bit. Number 10, the one up at the top there, to provide for any removal from office of an executive committee in terms of natural justice that is to be dealt with in terms of the code of conduct. You know, we serve on an executive committee at the will of council or at the will of the mayor. And to say that there needs to be rules of natural justice, you're basically saying that there needs to be a hearing, that it needs to be considered, that there needs to... It's not political to do that. You know, sometimes you say, well, this person's not aligned with our political vision for this municipality, and we want to change and sort them out. So I think that we need to be very, very cautious about putting something like that in. I think that's opening us up to court cases and all sorts of things. I really think that we need to be careful about some of these things. I think this whole proposal is way too premature to structure that.
Madam and Chair, slide number 5, additional update. The what conduct and provision of feedback to the community state. I mean, is the traditional leader alone who's providing feedback to the community, or is it the traditional leader and his counter? Because I remember I actually brought this particular topic to this committee, that the reason why there are problems, you know, especially in the rural areas, in the traditional rural areas, where, for instance, the initiation schools are happening. I said that the conflict today is because whenever legislation is brought down to those areas from this level for public participation, it's very rare where you find that the traditional leader being called upon to a province to come and give a workshop on such things. That it's very rare that he comes with 3, 4, 5 of his council members. He comes alone. So I said that we need to guard against this, because traditional leaders, in presenting issues of legislation to the community, they are partisan. They don't actually give a fair report to the community, because most of this legislation is actually, you know, sort of devoting their power. And that is why they want to be alone when these things are done. Now, I want to know what form does this impact to the community take? Is it the traditional leader, singularly, or is there any provision that we must come with 3, 4, 5 of members of the inner sector, that is his council, so that in giving the feedback to the community, they can also make present their understanding of issues being brought down to that level.
As your person. No, just to make a comment on the same four issues. Same because some of the issues have already been covered. Now, on the question of what committee, the problem in the main seems to be that what committees have been distorted. They're not being implemented as was originally intended. Because you see, all committees are supposed, in terms of the original idea, the PNB legislation, was that all committee members are elected, to advise the council. That is, and then to advise, and that's in terms of how they are constituted. They are supposed to be these structures, these persons, these individuals who represent sectors in the community, business, cultural, you name it, in the community. That is not happening. And so what committees get narrowed down and don't seem to serve the purpose that they are meant to. In fact, what really happens is that they become a battleground in a struggle for resources, scarce resources in the local level. I'm just raising this so that, you know, when we write the final proposal, they should assist us to address the problem. But we don't imagine the issues and talk to something else other than the real core issues that are the first comment. Yeah? The same issue that is what Member spoke to, the question of consultation. As I understand it, I mean, consultation means meaningful engagement. That's the start of it and that's the finish of it. What we need to do is, in an ongoing way, to, educate, clarify this matter to a whole range of stakeholders, especially traditional leaders. Because traditional understanding of consultation, not all of them, but some of them, a significant number of them, is that consultation means do as I say. So you come to traditional leaders, talk to them, and they give you a point of view. This is what has happened. And if that does not happen following that engagement, then we are accused of making them toothless and meaningless participants in processes. So that I should mention that. Again, the issue there is the understanding of the issue. There's something that I don't quite understand. This thing of upon refusal of so-and-so to convene a meeting, so-and-so must then intervene. What I don't understand is, at what point does one come to a conclusion, a determination, that there is a refusal? Because at the political level, people can just stay away. And then the problem can just continue and so on. I'm not saying that we've not thought about it, but I'm sure it can be looked into. And lastly, there is a general complaint by traditional leaders that they can't see meaning in their participation in municipal council. So I've been many of the meetings that we've had with communities in many provinces on the Khoisan Commission. So we need to, I think, carefully try and find meaning for traditional leaders in this meeting without undermining the primacy of democratic processes. But if they feel they're just there, it's likely to continue to cause a lot of lack of trust.
Thanks, sir. I just have some, just two questions. I want to ask.
Regarding the demarcation board, first, I just want to find out why do the demarcation board not independent from the ruling party, first of all. And the reason why I'm asking this is because the demarcation board always want to change boundaries whenever the ruling party is losing ground in what municipality. Secondly, I just want the clarity, are the powers of the municipal manager the same with the powers of the speaker or the acting speaker?
No.
The issue of traditional leaders. I think it's unfortunate that we are but where it is stated that the term of office should be linked to that of the municipality. My contribution on that is, given the fact that traditional leaders are born leaders, they are not voted, probably it requires to be tightened up, because what you will be confronted with is a situation where a traditional leader can't be told who what the term of office should be, because he's not elected and therefore can't be told what the term of office should be. I think that needs to be taken up. Again, I think now on the issue of removing a member, I think it's a member of committee that is on the line from that situation. I think the interest presupposes that a member would be removed unfairly. But what happens when a member has to be removed? If we tighten screws in terms of removing a member. Well, I think it's important to have a mechanism that kind of objectively looks at protecting a member's presence in a committee as much as a member can be removed for whatever reason. Because you would have a problem where, you know, whilst trying to do good, but a committee will be stuck with a member that is not kind of assisting the committee. So I think that there needs to be a balance, but I don't know how that is going to be possible. And the last one is on the municipal manager calling a council meeting. You see, we live in a society where people are hungry for power and people are easily persuaded and aligning themselves with us. How do you get to a point, I think it's a question that was raised earlier, so you forgive me for the question. Because you see, if I'm close to the municipal manager, and there's a particular interest that I have on specific matter, and I know that the speaker or acting speaker would not easily call a meeting, and I know that I'm in close proximity with the municipal manager, it's easy to sway the manager to convene a meeting to meet my interest or the purpose that I want to achieve. So I'm saying, how do you then strike a balance between the two? Trying to avoid issues of factionalism, you know, people that so seek to achieve their own goals and objectives in a municipality vis-a-vis a speaker or acting speaker who does not want to continue anything or whatever. So I'm saying, for me, I think we might defeat the purpose of wanting what you want to achieve while you think you are correcting something else. Thank you, sir.
Regarding the role of traditional leaders, the council says that their role is mainly ceremonial. Now, what are the envisaged roles of these leaders? I mean, in terms of your presentation here, because you are just saying roles of traditional leaders, but you are not really detailed as to
what would be their actual roles in a municipal setting, because there is this constant conflict between the traditional leader and councillors. They are actually claiming the roles that are actually necessary for municipalities. Now, what concretely, what are their roles? Can you just tell us what their roles are based on the constitution? Secondly, the issue of the board committee. Who is actually responsible for the calling of a meeting in order to establish the board committee? Because there is a conflict between, there is a political interference from either the MM or the Speaker of Council. They bring politics into the formation of this. And the process leading to the formation of this committee. They are hardly announced, they are hardly, you know, advertised, and in most cases in the rural areas, these committees are actually being set up under night cover. For what reason, we don't know. That is why there is constantly, you know, a fight over a formation of this committee. And what are the mechanisms to resolve in case there are conflicts? Some people are claiming that they were not informed, like it is the case now in the rural areas. Quite many of them have actually been put on hold. They are not functioning because people actually took a strong exception to the fact that they were not involved in the formation of it. And, you know, they go to the extent of importing people outside the ward. Outside the ward. Now, what is your department doing in order to get that kind of practice? Because in the Structures Act, you say people must actually be those that live in the ward. But people at night are actually being transported elsewhere into the ward. What do you do about that?
Yes, they don't see this committee.
The number.
They don't see this committee as you know a committee that has to be as a launching pad into the political arena. That's what they do.
This is a difficult question.
I think I forgot to mention when we started, for example, the traditional leadership and governance framework amendment here. The things contained there, it is as a result of the traditional Khoisan leadership deal, because it's taking longer, and we don't have any legal provision at the moment. The same applies to the slide on the amendment of traditional leadership here on Section 81. Different. Already we have made comprehensive amendment on the framework act, not framework act, on the bill, traditional and Khoisan leadership bill. So this is in case it takes longer because we understand the dynamics pertaining to that. So I wanted to just raise that. And the way I'm going to ask Dr. Naidu and then a colleague from IEC and the Mem GL is going to deal with the work committee related questions. And between the Dr. Brester and myself, we will deal with a number of traditional leadership related questions. Perhaps let me start by indicating the question that Honorable Matsuka has raised is at the heart of, you know, the role of traditional leaders. They don't have any constitutional power. We see their role and they don't accept it. We see their role as, you know, in the five catchwords. One is facilitating role. To facilitate because they have the people within their own their village there facilitating. Supportive role, supporting municipalities in those areas. And the second, as we see, the third one is advisory role. Anything that has to do with customary law, impacts on customary things, related things, they advise government. Number four, dispute resolution. There's a number of studies that have been conducted in various countries where you have candidates. It has been found that they are very good at dispute resolution in their area. And the last role that they are not playing correctly is ceremonial role. When you tell them that your role is ceremonial, they feel it's inferior. It's low status. The Queen in England has mastered that ceremonial role to the extent that people respect, because they are not contesting in the political stage, you know, as a result of that and so on. And also, very interestingly, the issue of the Shanghandi does not go through. And when they go into the community, they speak, and that is the decree. You know, there's no, in many instances, there are some traditional leaders that allow engagement and so on. That you can observe in the traditional courts where they allow different people talking. But when the traditional leaders speak, you know, then it's final. You can't speak after that and so on. They envisage the role really in the council, the tension that we have documented between the elected leaders and traditional leaders in the people. At the heart of it, as you know, the 1951 authority there gave traditional authority both executive and legislative power. They were a municipality in a way in their area. Now, after 1990, new dispensation in the Republic, there is still the hangover of the power. In Northwest, there were unfinished houses by human settlement in the province, and there were thugs that were, you know, doing all activities in those incomplete houses. And they sent people to go and finish those houses. The traditional leader there said, get out of my area. This is my area. And the constitution says, wall to wall municipality. That's why traditional leaders don't have boundaries. They have jurisdictional area, which is cultural, which can straddle across three municipal boundaries, and so there are those are soft boundaries and so on. So, in other words, you know, that's the issue. You know, I came up with a broad response regarding the traditional, the consultation. It's very rare. I've seen the model. I visited Royal Bafokeng. I was looking at the model they are using. It's one of the best models because, you know, I even attended the councils, and it's something that we can take a leap from. You know, it's more democratic processes and so on, and it has nothing to do with the money they have. It's just a particular practice where they have evolved from, you know, every tradition to this other side of things and so on. The issue of voting, Honorable Mellon, you know, our president, they have raised that question to the president to say, no, but we're not voting there, we're just sitting like stooges. And the president just responded by saying, do you want to be called out of order? And the president was saying, it's a hot terrain. If you get into that terrain, you'll be called out of order, and so on. Because, you know, a number of traditional leaders, when you have a meeting with them, even if you are discussing developmental issues, you know, they gravitate towards the benefits and those kinds of things and so on. So it becomes a very difficult thing. So you can imagine in the council meeting where they are discussing issues, critical issues, where they'll be lamenting on the benefits and things like that and so on. So this is my response. I'm going to ask Dr. Nigel, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, teacher. Chair, the comment that, you know, the document is premature. What we have before us today is the culmination of comments that have been received from our stakeholders, some, so it hasn't been tested as yet. It's just proposal that we received. We're looking at having a workshop on Thursday and Friday of this week to intensively look at all of the issues that are before us. So I agree, Honorable Mayor, that I mean, it's just not on to federalize the development of all the responsibility by an MEC. In my view, it should come from national level. So I agree totally. So the role of MM is going to be vehicles, quality, etc. So perhaps it would be more ideal to have a politician involved, and perhaps that politician can see to call such a meeting in the event that it is not called. I don't think you can relegate a function of the state of the municipality to perhaps but I think we need to perhaps also delegate that to the other team forward. The matter around powers to Section 79 committees. Increasingly, municipal public accounts committees are becoming a beacon of hope in the neighborhood. Now, there's various stakeholders that are out there doing capacity building. The DG's office, treasury, SALDA, the department, just trying to see how we get this oversight role correct. But if you look at Section 79 of the Structures Act, and it says, the municipal council may remove a member of the committee at any time. So if a member of a committee is doing the right thing, asking the right questions, exercising his oversight responsibility, like no other, and that person is removed. And we say, perhaps let's make it a bit more difficult to remove a person when and perhaps, if you look at a two-third majority, for instance, those are some of the things that have been coming out from the ground, from government, from municipalities, to say, let's make it difficult to just change persons that are doing their job. So that's where it comes from. We take the other issues, and I think perhaps DG, like I indicated to you this morning, at the opportune time, you know, once we've fleshed out all of the policy positions in this regard, we deliver it to our legal people for drafting, convert it into a whole, and then we come back to the committee. This is what we've done. This is the progress that we have done. This is the engagement that we have done. And I think, for all intents and purposes, the inputs that we receive are for the benefit or for the good of local. And although it's raw, it's premature, I think that we want to get local governments working, and the input that we're getting, we will flesh it out over the next 2 years. Come back to the
committee. Thank you, Chief, Honourable Members and Chairman. In addition to the sentiment that the committee has raised, our plea is that the base be considered as this proposal. We can proceed from partners in the sector through various forms of engagement, researches, you know, assessment of the previous term of office. And it still has a lot of work to be done on. And obviously, we will be exploring and deliberating on various, you know, scenarios to come to one final one, which could be a in responding to the question which relates to the concern around increasing the number of ward committees, you know, through previous performance of ward committees, concerns have been raised that, you know, in as much as the model, when it was first instituted, had a lot of good intentions, but it had sort of a blunt you know, approach. You've got 4,392 across the country, all your metros and local municipalities. And out of this was, there was obviously differ in terms of size, in terms of, you know, factors that are related to socio-economic positions of the various municipalities. Now, in essence, we require a differentiated, you know, model that's going to be looking at various forms, you know, of municipalities and addressing those challenges in relation to the manner in which, you know, they are constituted. Now, what we were presented with was a position that said, in your more smaller ones, the model was found to be more effective. However, in your more larger ones, which could have, you know, challenges in relation to the distances that need to be, you know, traveled by the various members in engaging the community, we perhaps need to look at increasing the number of representatives, you know, to ensure greater, you know, reach and a broader community involvement. Now, there are a lot of, you know, quite a number of proposals, you know, that also are geared towards guiding us towards saying perhaps for this size of a municipality or this size of a ward, this could be, you know, the most appropriate number, you know, for consideration. But as the colleague said, this is also going to be declared further at the workshop that we will be having in the next 2 days. The honourable member is correct in relation to the financial implications, you know, that are attached to the implementation of this model. As it is, you know, municipalities are required, you know, by law to support, you know, the operations of ward committees. Taking into account that these are your more voluntary structures and therefore do not necessarily, you know, form part of your structured payroll for a municipality, we're looking at a reinvestment of out-of-pocket expenses, you know, of ward committees in relation to traveling, in relation to enhancing their operations. For your more struggling municipalities, we're currently assisting with the payment of allowances, you know, for ward committee members in your grades 1, 2, and 3 municipalities, whereby we give them a provision of 500 rand per ward committee member per year, but obvious, per month, sorry, but obviously that has proven also not to be enough. The final amendments and proposals may be accompanied by a workable funding model, you know, that would see us, you know, achieving a functionality of what committees in the future. The question relating to who calls what committee meetings, which is the responsibility of the ward chancellor as a chairperson of ward committees. And I suppose my understanding of the latter part of the question was in relation to the elections of ward committees and how those are undertaken in communities. Yes, we consist there are a lot of challenges currently, and hence, you know, the proposal to get greater and more involvement of IEC in the process of election of ward committees.
Okay, that indicate how we have captured the role of transitional leaders in the transitional and cohesion leadership.
Yeah. Thanks, Chairperson Vichy, honourable members. I think Vichy pointed out the proposed amendments to Section 81 of the Structures Act that is invisible, that the default has been prepared or will be prepared. It's just one avenue of trying to get Section 81 amended. But it's actually unlikely, I think, at this stage, that those amendments will go anywhere, because in Parliament, the traditional voice of leadership of that your committee is currently considering and has been put up to public hearing, there's a detailed comprehensive amendment to Section 81 in Schedule 3. If you have the A4 version of the bill accepted by Parliament, you'll find it from page 66 to page 70.
it's repealing or replacing Section 81. And I'll just run quickly through what it's covering. The current Section 81 is actually a very short section. It just talks about the identification of traditional leaders, and it must be read with Schedule 60, that particular act. The version in the TKLV, the one in front of you, deals with the representation on the council, how the particular traditional leaders, and by the way, it will also now in the future, remember the bill also deals with Khoisan, so it will also include your Khoisan leaders in the future. How the leaders to participate are to be nominated. It deals with, it depends on local houses, the establishment of local houses of traditional Khoisan leaders. But the 81 in this bill, TKLV, also deals with the permutations, different permutations, as to when there are no local houses. What do you do? How does it work? So it deals in detail with the representation. There are provisions about the things like disqualifications, the normal kind of provisions that you will find in ever there are the bodies to be established. The roles and functions are all spelled out there. It is what the DG has mentioned, advisory role, consultative role, facilitative role. But if you look at the clause 81 in the bill, in the TKLV, you will find a lot more detail there. Much more detail as to what are these roles, what they do. But yes, definitely, they cannot vote. We've been through that exercise, there's been many legal opinions written about that. It also deals with the feedback to community. One of the members spoke about that, and just the feedback of those who participate in municipal council proceedings will have to be through their council, through their judicial councils, and of course the same will apply to the Khoisan in the future, through the Khoisan council. It deals with the application of the code of conduct. It gives a little bit more clarity on the application of the code of conduct, and interesting for these colleagues will all know, but I don't know whether everybody else in the room knows. The Instructions Act refers to the Code of Conduct as containing the citizens. And not all traditional leaders that were participating or identified in Section 81 currently would necessarily be subject to that Code of Conduct. So we provide clarity on the application of the Code of Conduct, but we also say that the application of the Citizens Act Code of Conduct will not exclude the code of conduct contained in the traditional and Khoisan leadership, because that ultimately what traditional leaders are being subject to. And then lastly, it also deals with the out-of-pocket expenses, and this clarity as to what is happening with people. That, by the way, was developed together with SALDA over a long period of time, that part of the clause. And the fact is, currently there are municipalities that provide tools of trade to traditional leadership under the guise of out-of-pocket experience, and that's what out-of-pocket experience. There is a tools of trade policy that was developed, there's a tools of trade policy that was proposed by MINLAC and was being applied by provincial government. So, Chair, honourable members can just go back to the traditional Khoisan leadership policy, and they will find all these questions about Section 81 in Schedule 3 from page 66 on that. You see the comprehensive information for in place of Section 81. Thank you.
Thank you. There was a question on the relationship or advocating for a member. We are too young to.
No, I think we are all too young. But I think Palapa, you know very well what you are talking about. I think it would be a motion in the chamber. In the chamber, I think it would be a good motion. No. I think we can move because Palapa one is a very difficult one, but I'm not sure what he means. Because these are independents, such as they work independently from us, from the party, all parties got nothing to do with them. We participate fully like all other parties when we're invited. They don't report to any party, they report to parliament. They're really very important institutions, and I don't think we must have a discussion outside the formal issues. A motion for debate would be a good idea for your side when you are ready one day. But the point that I wanted to raise, my main worry is that it seems all social that you are searching up now in throughout the country, people are expecting to be paid. I think if you are not careful, we are going to set up thousands of structures and everyone expects us to pay. If we don't pay the Mbuna, we don't pay what councillors, then the state as a whole has its ransom. I think generally we must not run away from the issue of people volunteering their skills because they have time. I just see the danger now. But the school governing bodies have started to raise this issue. If our committees are paid, why we are not paid. And then we are just going to cause real problems. I always prefer the way it works in other countries anyway. That these structures, people volunteer their time. Because some are professional, some they have time to do so. I think this thing of pay, because already we need to give them allowance or out-of-pocket allowance, I'm not sure what you call. They complain already that this thing is too little. I can't take a taxi from point A to point B. And then we have to increase. And then if you increase it, you are traditional leaders throughout the country, so they need more money. And they're complaining for money. Seven, I'm not sure how many is in Buna. All of them are complaining for money. And then EPWC, what is standard work, there's money, community work, money. It seems general, if you are not careful, we are going to employ everyone in South Africa just to do nothing. And I think we are overstretching everything on that. But I'm not sure what would happen if this one committee disappears. Council won't disappear. Because some of them anyway become very, very problematic, the manner in which they conduct. I think now we want to professionalize every IEC to conduct election. And then the point that Honorable Masson was raising, I think also when we were in South at the time, that these facilitation structures must not really, I think also Dr. will know better than myself, that South Africans generally speaking, through our own research, they don't participate in structures that they didn't create it themselves. Generally at all. We can create thousands of structures, they simply ignore those structures, they create their own parallel structures. But it seems we are continuously setting up structures. And I just think that what committees in many other parts of the country that are absolutely not very helpful. They are not very helpful. And I'm not sure why you want to pursue them forever. They are painful sometimes in other areas, but generally, they are very problematic now. Because they become contestation just for power purposes. They are no longer addressing what Comrade Masson is saying. That they were meant to ensure that organization in society, churches, everyone comes in. And then it seems like it's just a duplication of parties. And then parties are in the council, they contest again at the World Committee level. I think it becomes very clumsy. It's not going to assist us this thing generally. Maybe it can assist us in rural areas, I don't know. But in areas, in urban areas, they're becoming a big problem. The contestation for them now is worse. If you are not careful, generous, even councillors, that's why they don't call them sometimes. Because it becomes a broadcast game rather than addressing what we wanted to do. As long as we remain within the intended purpose of the World Committees, and then because if we don't do so, I think that's creating problems. Paying them is good, 500 rand is good, but if you pay 500 rand for 4,092 times 100, thousands, because it's big, this thing. It's not just a small thing, even if it's 500 rand, but you time it. And you realize that you are spending a lot of money and sustaining them. Of course, it's very nice for them to have something to do, but I think we should still go back to people volunteering their time. And then to have all these allowances, because I don't think it's in Sawaito Masondo. the work committee will need its allowance to go to Zola. They would need allowance. But if you give them allowance in other areas, they demand allowance themselves. And then you create just an untenable situation. I just hope that the DG, as we move on through your new innovations and everything, we must try to relook at this thing. Because things are not doing what they're supposed to be doing now. Of course, I've got my work committee. I'm not sure now is the political gathering or is still what you wanted. And it is causing more harm to the councillor than good. It's not like when it used to happen, I think my son was tired. Members of the council called meeting or communities, people just stand there. And then there's no, now there's even a contestation about, even if the council is the facilitator of the meeting, others also they challenge the authority of the very same council. Now what committee members are supposed to assist the council for communication, for everything, but they challenge the council there. The purpose generated is becoming more and more diluted, is causing problems in many parts of our country. We have to relook at it seriously before it becomes an albatross to everyone who runs the council. Even today, who becomes the mayor of a mayor? Where can you win election? Mayor of Makado. Mayor of Makado. You will find it more difficult than that. But no, EG, and I think let us continue. Members are assisting you also to start when you draft the real amendment bills. At least you would have known now what are the concerns. You try to address them as you draft the bill. I think it's very helpful exercise for us to engage. Let us move to three, because other issues are still going to be debated when the bills are introduced. At the moment, really, just general discussion to ensure that we know exactly what is this problem when we set up the problem. Number three, what do you want us to do,
Honorable Chair, honorable members, this is the Municipal Systems Act. There are a few sections than the previous amendments. I think there are proposals with regard to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sections. And the majority of the proposals are technical in nature. For example, if we look at the first one, section 62. About the appeals, and then section 103, agreement with employers, section 115, service of documents and processes, which is more administrative in nature, section 108, restraint on transfer of property, and chapter 8, capital A, municipal entities. So we make various proposals with regard to each of the sections, starting with to provide for the appeals process regarding undisputed debt as indicated in the proposed section 103 amendment. And then the second one, section 103, the proposed amendment is to make provision for a municipality to be given power to appoint an agent to collect municipal debt. And the advantage of doing that is that it shortens the collection period, and it reduces the collection cost. It instills, to some extent, or improves the culture of payment and the ability to pay service vendors. Section 115 currently does not cater for ordinary mail. It only makes reference to registered or certified mail. So this is more technical stuff there. Other means of media, such as email, social media, have surfaced and can be used on service of documents and processes. Proposal is to make provision for the serving of notices by means of ordinary mail to recognize other established forms of electronic media. And the following amendments have been proposed. In addition to other recognized forms of service, any notice or other documents that are served on a person in terms of this act or by a municipality in terms of any other legislation is regarded as having been served. Section 115 A, B, D, and E not changed. However, C added the underlined word and so on. So we, for example, if we look at C underneath there on the CF, when it has been posted by an ordinance, it's underlined. Those are more technical there. Section 118, the interpretation of Section 118 has been on many occasions contested in court. It's a gray area. So in order to beef it up, proposal is made to amend this section and to include subdivisions and consolidation and to remove the two-year limitation on the amounts to be certified as having been fully paid when a clearance certificate is issued by a municipality in the event of a transfer of ownership of property. The proposal is to also have Section 118 to provide as follows. A registrar of deeds may not register the transfer of property, a subdivision, or a consolidation of property, except on those are the small amendments there that are being made. The next part, which is Section 8, Capital A, we're saying Chapter 8, Capital A, of municipal entities to be aligned with the Companies Act. This is again rationalization of legislation, different legislation that are duplicated, and so on. There is a need to protect municipalities in case of insolvent companies with municipal debt, and especially responsible directors. And Section 18 of the Tax Administration Act provides clauses that we think could be included in the system tax. You know, there's that section from the that Tax Administration Act proposed that could be considered. That's the
three. Mm. What is that?
Chair, I just have three little questions. Let me start with Section 115. I'm a bit concerned about the proof of delivery. By adding in ordinary mail, for example, or social media, how do you prove that you've instituted delivery on that person? Okay, that's my first question. The second goes to 103 and 62. First of all, 62. I've just reread Section 62, and I don't think there's any need for this amendment. I think that it's already covered in what's there in 62, but, you know, I'm open to persuasion. But 103 talks specifically to the arrangements with the employer of somebody who owes money to a municipality. And I'm not convinced that you can enter into an arrangement with a third party to deduct from a person's salary directly without a court order. I think that there may well have to be a legal process before such a deduction can take place. But again, I'm open to persuasion otherwise.
Thank you,
Honorable Chair. I think the inputs that are being made, we have taken note of them in the extreme spirit of the earlier discussion and proposed amendment, that it will also assist us to guide in terms of when we process this work stream of these inputs that have been made, including if we're using other forms of delivery, how, what proof do we have. We'll consider those things when we go to work session, so that we make it much more tight. When we come back, we will be able to present something that has been tested in terms of other stakeholders. So we take note of the comments that have been made.
Okay, but that is helpful, you are preparing us. That the issue that I have in the remember already indicated what areas I will ask you and move on. Let's move to four. Customer initiative in business. What do you want us to do there? Because you are in CRM that has already started. What are they doing then?
They are just holding people accountable to the guests that they are having, and that exercise they are doing is useful, but it's not as useful as this legislation. Because, firstly, if one could say, many people talk about illegal initiation schools, and there's no such thing as illegal initiation schools, because we do not have legislation that indicate which one is illegal and so on. Now, many people in Gauteng and various provinces, police would come and arrest somebody and say, no, this is illegal. And only to find that, they would much deal with the perpetrators of those bogus schools in the absence of it.
There will be something illegal even if it's not written anywhere. I think that's why they say to me they're asking that it's illegal because it's not according to the custom and the custom. But in terms of the cost, they may find it very difficult to prove. But I think in a community they will know very well this is not illegal. Of course, customary law is also passive and convention that is also evolve over thousands of people. And then, okay, let us take on this one. It's very interesting also. We move, and I think they're better people. So it's becoming a bigger issue.
It is a bigger issue. Quite often, sometimes we come across as saying there is no legislation. We do have the National Health Act, but it's not detailed to be able to deal with the problem that we're facing at the moment. So over the past few years, we developed a policy that has gone through different processes and cabinet approved that we commence with a deal. And we've consulted, it is one of the pieces of legislation that has been so consulted that, we even caught in the space of the Khoisan people to look at their initiation, and we were requested to look at women initiation schools. But being mindful of the prohibition of the mutilation aspect of the initiation of women. And so on. So we have consulted on page 31, we are showing the number of stakeholders we have consulted, and then the feedback that has been received. And we have taken it through state law advisors on the 2nd of September. Their pre-certification opinion was received on the 20th of December 2016. Now this bill, customary initiation bill, it has gone through the GNA governance and administration cluster. Already, and the purpose of this process of the deal has to be presented to the following structure: the GNA working session on the 23rd of February, and the GNA, Digital and then Cabinet Committee. The request to Cabinet will be to approve the publication of the bill in Government Gazette for public comment. And this is as far as this part is concerned. And while this, we commenced it in 2011, I think, to be precise. 2011. And it is still where we were working with CRL Rights Commission. And we feel that the intervention by CRL Rights Commission will assist us because the levels of accountability at lower level, the issue of commercialization of initiation schools, a big issue. In Gauteng, somebody just organizes boys and say, you know, I'm going to deal with this thing. And they put them in a kumbi, and then they take them somewhere in the heap on the mining dump. And when the police come, they can see them. And then they run away and those kind of things. So we believe, we're working closely with NPA and the police and so on. They are beginning to really, really become quite tough, but with a gap of our law, provinces have come up with laws which are not consistent and so on. So when this one is finalized, provinces will have to align with this one and so on. In Mpumalanga, as an example, the medical doctors, because they were blending in 2013, they were combining the medical, maybe circumcision with initiation, you know, which was very helpful. But there was a very big challenge where some medical doctors got arrested and they were even charged and so on. So for the customary process that is performed, which I can't say, they are not allowed to do surgery in that process according to customary. And when they listen to the traditional leaders and the traditional surgeons, and they did not do that, so they had to be charged. We were told that they were supposed to have used their codes as medical practitioners to deal with that and so on. So these are the complexities that are there. But we believe that one of the things this customary bill is catering for is the structure from national, provincial. At the moment we have those structures, but they are not they are just casual kind of structures in those kind of things. And can I go to the last one? Short as well.
What is happening now is going to set up personally. I think that countries like Bahrain, I think they've already started people to school themselves. We end up with a mental situation. That's the problem. That has put us to the situation. We can't rely on the customer results. I think this is on the range of members that will wait for it, but I'll start reading in the PA and MC what is the difference between to start planning when the bill comes and the able to. The problem from that thing is everyone contacts. Department, I think, will contact Postgres. Parliament contacts Postgres. Into National Assembly, into almost on the same level. And it's something that we need to talk
about. I think the
moment we put it, the point was to be like a general communication system. If you want to consider somewhere in the field, you cannot be sitting inside.
Okay. It's my idea, if I have a problem, I'm not going to consider. Now, I think This is quite rigid. I think it would assist to enforce some of the practices that are already there to try and regulate the customer a bit more. Where we are registered in a startup, boys go for a checkup before they go through for initiation and stuff. But there are instances where that is not done, which I think that's where the inequality comes in. But obviously, without such a legislation, there's nothing that holds people more to account. Because we are able to talk against it and talk people out of it, why there are gaps that are coming. So I'm saying, probably it's more urgent than looking at it, to try and make sure that the custom doesn't disappear, but also it does not seem to be a killer of this kind of.
Well, we are waiting for it. I think there are processes and policies. We will have to start to analyze. Let's move to five. Additionally, that is the
last one. I just keep reading it. It is what happens with the famous F. Projects coming into effect in 2004. There were timelines for the reconstitution of tribal authorities into traditional countries. That reconstitution also contained transformative imperatives. And that was the third of members of the women, 40% of the communities. You know, when we talk about converting tribal authorities to that, it had an element of democracy and so on. So by 23rd September 2011, that timeline, the timeline expired, and many provinces have not done anything about it. Now, one of the biggest challenges is that we also follow the electoral cycle, that every 5 years they've got to be paid, and it's also very costly in some cases to run these elections and so on, especially knowing that these institutions are not properly resolved. And so these issues are well covered in the traditional and Christian relationship. After the timeline expired on the 23rd of September 2011, those timelines affected the following things. One is that reconstitution. And the second thing is the community authority, where you have a community here, they alternate after a certain time. They let somebody to be examined there. So there were processes as well where they were supposed to have submitted their claims to the District and Claims Commission. Some of them have not done that. So there's no provision of disestablishment for those community authorities. The timeline is flat. The third aspect that we are trying to address here is the establishment of King's Councils. We cannot establish King's Councils in terms of the statement that it says that after the announcement of this kings and kingships, which was done on the 29th, of July 2010, a year thereafter, we should have established the King's Council. Now, there are other issues that are unforeseen, such as there's a provision that says the minister must consult the kingship to come up with a formula. That, and so on. So it's a very cumbersome thing then. You have to get an appointment sometimes and so on. So that time lapsed. So we are also asking for that extension now. The most crucial thing that made us to come with this intervention is because the National House, the houses, are supposed to reconstitute the current houses, National House, and so on. Their term is expiring on the 16th of August this year. We don't have much time there's no legislation that would make us to deal with that subject. As a department, we have, having learned from the past, we have put in measures in place to have a service provider nationally that would assist the provinces, you know, to look at cost-effective measures to deal with this thing and finish it on time. There will be, you know, the service provider nationally will work out on the timeline from 16th of October coming better. To look at all provisions, legislative provisions, to take into account the provincial pieces of legislation national, and look at where the gaps are and so on. They will prioritize, they will work in cooking, they will prioritize the reconstitution of the national house, the central houses and so on, and then they will visit other provinces and so on. So this is what this is all about. This is the point I explained earlier, to say the bill, the Transitional Program Development Bill, being leaked at root, the whole range of things in it, it may delay and so on and so on. So this one has been taken to the Cabinet Committee. Cabinet Committee supported it, and it's going back tomorrow to Cabinet, so that, you know, they understand that it has to be expedited, because if it's not expedited, we'll still lose an egg on our face. Like, you know, about 5 years ago, the end of the term, we were aligning the terms of housing of the Cabinet to be the same. So we were supposed to reconstitute by April every year. But because provinces were left, they had not concluded, and then it had to push us to August. There was a vacuum, there was no National House, and so on. Officials were running on their own. So in order to avert those things, there is this support that it must be treated as a special priority to close this gap, and so on. Thank you.
In this proposal, the amendment bill, we hold much any associations are quite at this point when it's passed before what end of office you lose it instead of having this one. Provided of course that it works. Let us work on the time frame and work in terms of other issues and try to ensure that once the cabinet approves it tomorrow, then it becomes into effective. And then we work on it. There is a self-government of it. Because this will be too fast before August. And then many of the areas also will also pass quite time. And there will be a repeal of it by quite time. The intention of the government to work with the children of the current government.
Chair, sorry, just one concern. The customary initiation bill, I know there's processes and everything that has to be followed and it's got to go out for public. It could obviously be a Section 76 bill to go to the provinces and there would be public participation. But I'm concerned about that timeline. I mean, we've got young men who are dying. We are far behind the curve on this one, and I think we need to take action on it much quicker than it is after my birth.
It can be
25
for
them.
Okay, now that part we have to follow the same. Something that I think I was not trying to say, you know, see that for myself. I'm going to Let us then thank you very much for your very helpful. I think you know now what we should do. Demarcation issues, initiation is very important. Traditional leadership, one also government, is very important. I think the committee has time. Okay, thank you very much, members of the main for meetings and other issues. Thank you very much, DG, the team. We'll meet again when we are ready to come.